The Next Big Think, a shout out to the future, presented by TCS Co-Innovation Network, powered by TCS Space.
Hello and welcome to The Next Big Think, a podcast where TCS futurist Kevin Benedict is in conversation with startup CEOs and founders to bring you insights and stories from the world of technology with an eye on the future.
Welcome to The Next Big Think. In this podcast, we give a shout out to the future. I'm your host, Kevin Benedict, a partner and futurist here at TCS. And I want to thank each of you for listening today. My guest today is David Gerente. He's the CEO and co-founder of Narrativa. David, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
So this weekend, we're celebrating our Labor Day, kind of the celebration of the end of summer. Now, I see from your profile and your background, David, that you've lived all over the world. So how do you pick and choose what holidays you choose to keep?
Well, actually, I haven't had a proper holiday for many years. I know it's doing something, but, you know, I try to find places that from my childhood that helped me to relax and, be outdoors. So that's the main role. So I spend time in North Spain and Estonia in summer, usually.
That's a beautiful part of the world. So you've experienced living in at least six different countries. How has that experience helped you as the CEO of Narrativa?
Well, in general, it helped me to understand better people and different cultures, and also to understand that there are many different answers for the same question. Yeah, so that was very important for me, because obviously Narrativa, we have it's a multicultural team, not to mention that we have customers around the globe. So it helps me to really understand how to interact with different cultures and be more like, not to judge people or cultures, just to try to understand the reasoning behind certain habits and so on. So it is very interesting for me, and it definitely helped me to also build my character.
You know, when I first started traveling internationally, David, I thought it was so fascinating to see how, you know, my experience, especially as a young person, up to that point had only been in the U.S. before professionally I started traveling all over the globe. And then you would see how the same challenge, it might even just be a traffic flow, how that same challenge is handled differently all over the world. And it just broadens your mind about how the same problem has many different solutions.
That's right. That's right. And also, it helps you to understand that some things might be a problem in certain countries, but not in other countries. Right. That's also very interesting, yeah?
Absolutely. So I imagine, you know, having traveled everywhere and lived so many different places, and now having offices in so many places as well, that the different languages must play a role in you know, helping you guys better understand the whole process of natural language generation. You know, how do you find that experience helpful?
Yeah, well, with languages, it helps us to understand first that obviously having a common language or working language, which is English in our case, super, super useful, but also helped me to understand it. You know, living abroad helped me to understand that how important are local languages, you know? We think that English is, you know, the kind of lingua franca, you know, for today's, but there are many, many different languages that if you actually pay attention to these languages, you discover that there are many, many interesting markets, obviously, for natural language generation.
So before we get further into our podcast today, David, let's just define NLG or natural language generation, because we're going to be using that phrase a lot today. So what's your definition? What does it mean to somebody who's not familiar with this space?
Yeah, well, basically natural language generation is a subcategory of natural language processing. So when we talk about natural language generation, we are always also talking about natural language processing. The specifics of natural language generation is that the models you use or the systems you build are the goal is to actually generate language in natural language. Yeah. So that's kind of the difference, because natural language processing you can use models to extract entities or classify text or find synonyms or doing paraphrasing, but let's say by using different of these technologies or models together, then you actually achieve the natural language generation.
Thank you for filling us in there, because I don't want to, bury people in acronyms that they're unfamiliar with. Let's talk about, what was your original vision? Where did that vision come from for creating Narrativa? And has that vision changed over the years?
So I just wanted to build a new way or to develop a new way to create content at scale, because Kevin, if you think about how much content is available right now, it's crazy, and how much data, it's just amazing the amount of data and content produced every day. So if you put these two things together, the data to be able to actually generate the stories from data and content to be able to basically teach your system or train your systems, your AI to write content, then you have the combination there. So from the technological point of view, everything is there, the mix is there, but obviously, the market is taking it not as, it's a big change. It's a substantial change on how processes are carried out and how companies run and roles. So the market is still adapting, but definitely my vision was to actually find and develop a new way to create content.
Can you give us, before we move on, David, can you give us just a handful of examples?
We started from media. Basically, we started creating, generating news automatically. We still do it. For example, Wall Street Journal, they are publishing our content. Boston Globe, outside of the US, we have Infobae. In Spain, we have three or four customs. We even have customs in Saudi Arabia, yeah? So we create around 1.2 million articles every month. Believe it or not. Yeah. It's great. So, and we cover many different stories, but we also do customer communications and newsletters. We automate clinical study reports. We automate financial reports. We do product descriptions for e-commerce. So you just think about any area where you have actually data and you have a large need to create content. And this is where Narrativa steps in and helps these companies.
So the sweet spot, if I understand it right, David, and correct me if I'm wrong, is data-rich environments where there's a lot of data coming very quickly, and there's value in sharing that within a context. And just getting the raw data out there within understood context. Is that the sweet spot?
It's correct. Think about this, Kevin. We didn't invent something. Everybody was creating content before. So this doesn't change. What it changes is the way that the content is created. So, any industry that is currently creating content, now they have a way to do it much faster at the scale and definitely much cheaper than doing it manually. I mean, today, the content generated, when you generate content manually, you try to think about, okay, is this content going to be interesting? How many readers are it going to have? Mm-hmm. It's going to have, what is going to be the impact? Now the change, there's a new way, yeah? You don't have to think so much about how many readers this piece of content is going to have. because it doesn't matter. You can create a piece of content for one person. You understand, yeah? So right. Maybe this is a story that is interesting only for you, yeah? So yeah. It's done automatically, it's done at the scale. This changes everything when it comes to content creation. You know, the strategy, the content strategy changes dramatically. You know, all the long tail content for media, you know, usually long tail content was something that, you know, it was not there. Nobody created the stories manually to cover very, very, you know, specific niches with low value. Now it's different. You can do it. But not only that, because it's not fair to say that it's only about long tail. We're talking about also like writing content, which is like premium content, let's say. Think about clinical study reports for pharma companies. This is the document you create to send to the FDA to get your drug or your vaccine approved, right? So This is not long tail content. It's very important content, but by doing it automatically, you can do it in a much, of course, much faster way, because you create the first draft for the medical writers. Secondly, you can reduce the needs for reviews, because obviously the machine is not gonna make mistakes with the data, yeah?
Right.
The machines are good with data. And third, you know, you can free up time from the medical writers to actually perform other activities related to the submission of the documentation, yeah? So at the end, it's a win-win situation for everybody. And again, it helps with long tail, but also with this content, which is critical for organizations.
That's fascinating, David. So walk us through, you know, some of the differences in the technologies involved in the natural language understanding, natural language generation, natural language processing, at a high level, as high as you can for us, you know, non-techies, and just walk us through kind of what technologies make that all possible.
Okay, so, you know, we use different technologies, but the main one is obviously we use machine learning and deep learning. Why we do that? Because traditionally, natural language generation was done in a very programmatic way. Basically, I mean, I think everybody remembers the templates that you could build in Microsoft Word, right? You build a template and then you fill the gaps, basically, with data.
Right.
That's a programmatic approach, yeah? Which requires you to know in advance all the scenarios possible, yeah? Because you need to program them.
Right.
So the difference with our approach using deep learning and machine learning is that we teach the system how to write by ingesting hundreds of thousands, millions of articles, of documents, of customer communications. So the system is able to actually understand the style, and for that we do clustering and classification of sentences. It's able to understand the content of these sentences by extracting entities within ontologies. Yeah, all these are machine learning and deep learning models that help us to extract the essence of the basically to teach the system how to write. And then obviously we have the other aspect with this, which is the data analysis, yeah? Because it's not only, the machine might know how to write. I mean, the best example is GPT-3. It's a model that OpenAI released, like, I think a year ago. It's a language model that is able to generate content, you know? And it's amazing how well it does it. But the problem is that it doesn't generate content based on, basically it's able to maintain a conversation, but it's not able to tell you, okay, you give to the model like a spreadsheet with, I don't know, sales numbers, it's not gonna be able to actually build a report, yeah? Because it doesn't understand the context, yeah? The way that other approaches do. But so everything is about data in the last stage. So We need to understand the data. And for that, we do analyze the data. And again, we also use some statistical models, but again, it's mainly machine learning and deep learning.
That is fascinating. So when you look at everything involved in being able to produce this natural language generation, what really are the hardest components of that, the hardest things to achieve with that?
Well, the hardest thing is to make sure that the machine is actually coherent and understands the context. That's very hard. Because you need to make sure that you know, it's consistent, that always behaves in a similar way. Yeah, and when I say behave means that the output is consistent. So it always follows the same structure. That is very important because you don't want to have many different type of styles or structure of the content, because it really doesn't help to the readers. Yeah. And definitely the context is probably the hardest part here.
You
need to have an ontology behind the domain, in the domain, for the system, for the AI to really understand the context. Yeah. And to build this ontology is incredibly hard. Again, we use machine learning to help us to build these ontologies, but they change a lot from one domain to another. And some domains like clinical study reports for pharma, these ontologies are really large. Yeah. So they are very complex, and this is where AI needs more help.
So when we're talking about NLG, what are the outputs that you're typically generating? Are they mostly text, mostly article, or can they be used to populate a chatbot conversation, or to generate synthetic speech or animation or avatars? You know, can it be used in all those areas?
All those areas. You know, we do generate text, but we also generate graphics, yeah? And then obviously if you want to generate voice, the first step is to generate text, yeah? So let's say the last thing we are doing, and something you didn't mention, is that we are using our technology to actually generate synthetic data sets. Why is that? You know, sometimes there are some industries like pharma, but also finance or even, military and security, they are not very keen to share data to train AI models. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's very hard. So what we are doing now is we are using our technology to build synthetic data sets. So to recreate real data sets, but they are not real. Yeah, they are fake. But why we do that? Because for the machine, these data sets, it doesn't matter if it's real or not, as long as it's coherent with the domain. So we are able to build new data sets to train AI models. And once these models are used with real data, they behave. They perform very well.
You are listening to The Next Big Think, a shout out to the future.
The TCS Co-Innovation Network, or TCS Coin, brings alive the technology innovation ecosystem by partnering with startups, academia, and the business community. TCS's Coin Accelerator program works with startups for at least 1 year. If you're a startup that's looking to scale, or you're an established business looking for cutting-edge emerging technology to meet your customer needs, the Coin Accelerator program is where you begin. If you'd like to know more about how Coin is connecting large businesses and startups the world over, email us at global.coin@tcs.com.
So if we were to look at the industry of NLG, and we're looking at the maturity of that industry, on a scale from 1 to 10, where 1 is brand new and 10 is fully mature, where would you put NLG on that scale today?
I think probably we're between 3 and 4.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we are a handful of companies specializing on energy. The industries that are adopting energy are still, let's say, there are very few companies really embracing NLG at the scale. However, the last 12 months, we have seen a dramatic change. So we see exponential growth now across many industries. We see that the benefits of NLG has been proven and the NLG has been understood. And something I mentioned before, the organizations are reshaping themselves. And COVID is obviously one of the main reasons why this is happening. They are trying to be more productive. They are trying to reduce the cost and increase the output. And they try also to actually find new business models and new revenue streams. And the way they do it is by trying to integrate different technologies, among them energy, to be able to, again, to increase revenues, to bring new revenues, to reduce costs, to be more flexible. So, you know, I guess I can say we are in a really, really good moment for the industry.
Okay.
And with an incredible future ahead of us.
You know, it's fascinating because one of the things that I do as part of my profession here at TCS is we're always studying emerging technologies, various current and future scenarios, and how changes in societal influences and economic and geopolitical issues impact possible future scenarios. And this pandemic that we're all experiencing has really changed the trajectory of technology adoption in so many different industries. And as you're sharing with us today, natural language generation is also being positively impacted, the interest in that area. Let me move our conversation over to biases, David. Because it seems like one of the key things, as we just talked about there, when your systems are looking at content and being able to convert that into text and things, is just making sure that there's not biases coming out of the system, whether intentional or unintentional biases that might change the context and meaning of what people are reading. Is that an issue, and how do you approach that and deal with it?
Yeah, it is definitely an issue. I mean, first I have to say that the biases come from ourselves, actually. You know, when we train the models, we use text that in general is generated by humans. And you can see when you train the model and you see the output, it's really biased quite often, especially on certain topics. You know, I'm not saying that this affects pharma or finance industry, because they are very like factual, let's say. But
right.
Media, for example, it does affect. Yeah. So, and it does affect, and it can have a big impact on the results. Yeah. The way we understand that this is not, well, I have to say, sometimes the bias is unintentional, but sometimes it's intentional, yeah? So what we try to do always, or what we do always, is to make sure that we have some mechanism in place to actually detect that, yeah? And this, what I mentioned before about the synthetic data sets, this plays
yes.
a role there, because these data sets you can actually peel to avoid these biases in most of cases, yeah. But I have to say, it's absolutely impossible to control, to be bias-free, let's say. But then there is another angle. Some customers or some potential customers might ask you to write content that is biased, and in that case, our decision as a company is not to do that. So we need to, the machines need to write content in a factual way, as objective as possible, but we should not allow the machines to actually influence certain views in any kind of view, because that's not the goal of the machines. The machines need to be factual, you know, not try to interpret the data to actually support certain opinions or certain point of views.
That's interesting because, as you pointed out, so many of these systems are trained on past data. And if there's past historic biases, then you don't want to just grab those and project them forward into the future through your system. You want to try to identify those biases in the past data and try to change those in some positive way going forward.
That's correct. I mean, we have some models that help us to detect subjectivity and biases. And they are not perfect, but they are definitely very, very helpful. So, especially for media, well, in general, for all the industries, in the process of designing the stories, we always have somebody, an expert from the industry, helping us to validate the results. And one of the things that they help us to validate is to, or to avoid, is to have biases, and again, and to have this angle of certain stories or subjectivity, which we cannot actually afford to let's say, to step in, because then we enter in a very different type of industry, which, you know, it can be fake news and all this, which is disgusting in our opinion.
Right. So what industries do you see right now being kind of the most fertile markets for you guys?
Life sciences, big way. It's a big way there. Pharma, hospitals, you know, manufacturers of vaccines. They really, really want to get to the market ASAP. Once the clinical trial is done, they want to get the vaccine approved, or the drug approved, or the treatment approved, and go to the market. If you think like they spend billions on developing drugs, and maybe a process to develop a drug and do all the, go through the trials takes maybe 5 to 10 years, you can't afford to be like 1 year on the process of, spend 1 year with the approval of the drug. Yeah, you want to be able to generate the report like in a matter of weeks, send it for approval and get it approved, you can get to the market. So that's kind of the main industry for us. And then obviously we have finance, insurance, and obviously the traditional like media, gaming, and e-commerce. These are the main industries where we see big traction. Logistics is coming, engineering, all these industries are also like, we see a lot of interest there, and they start adopting these technologies.
So David, you know, I've taken a look at a lot of different emerging technologies over the years, and it seems like I can't think of a case when it's not true that anytime a new emerging technology pops up, it can be used for either good or bad. And there's always somebody out there with a nefarious intent that figures out a way of using it for bad purposes. Is it the same in natural language generation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, technology is a facilitator, yeah? And AI is exponential, let's say. What you can do with AI, you cannot do with any other technology, you know? Mm-hmm. Think about, we all know the self-driving cars. That's a problem that you can only solve with AI. Again, in natural language generation, you can only solve with AI. I know this, but you do it as, at the scale, you know? So you build, and remember, it's software. So it's, yeah. You can replicate as much as you want, and there is no cost of distribution. It's a huge step forward for good or for bad. So, but I always say that we don't have to be afraid of using a technology that can be used for bad. What you have to be careful is that you need to understand that it's going to be used for bad, but you need to make sure that you also use it for good to fight, yes. Fight back. Yeah. Yes. So fake news can be also fought against using the same technology, you know. And I think energy is incredibly powerful, and every day is, the use is growing exponentially. And I have to say, we have seen some bad uses of energy, and we have gotten some bad proposals to use. But again, we truly believe that AI needs to stay in the side of the good guys, let's say.
David, let's talk about the future. Where do you see natural language generation? How do you see it evolving over the next 5 years?
You know, I think when it comes to the quality of the output, I don't think it's going to improve much, because it's already to an incredible level. You know, you can't, and you, when you read the story generated by a machine, you can't figure out that, you know, who wrote this story. They are nearly perfect. What is going to change dramatically is that we will be able to write a lot more complex stories. Yeah. And the process to design and implement the models to be able to write these stories, this process is going to dramatically change. It's going to require less human intervention. It's going to require less time. And again, we're going to be able to analyze much more complex data, even non-structured data, so text. And I think this is going to be a revolution for the companies, you know. And again, there will be a lot more industries and companies using it, governments, institutions. You know, think about this. We keep talking about transparency and accountability of governments and institutions, and for example, yeah. So
yes,
there is so much data. Why don't we transform all this data into text? Something that we can read, we can understand. And not only transform it into text, but into something that we can actually really easy to understand where the money is spent, you know.
Right.
You know, where these funds come from, you know. How is performing certain programs are performing, you know. All these things will help us to definitely have truly bring transparency, accountability to our society, and definitely it's going to help us to have more democratic countries, more free countries, you know, and definitely I think better societies in general. And I think NLG in combination with other industries is going to help us there, you know, because now the excuse is always like, oh, you know, there's so much data, what do we do with this data? It's like, okay, now there is something that is going to help you, and it's your responsibility to actually use the technology to improve your company, your society, your government, the country, the society in general. Yeah. And I think that's my vision. I think energy in combination with other industries is going to help definitely to anyway build better societies.
David, I want to thank you so much for just taking the time in your evening here before your son's soccer game or football game.
No, rugby.